Now, President Trump signed an executive order last week aimed at requiring public universities to ensure free speech rights on campus as a condition of receiving federal research grants. How the order would be enforced wasn't made clear. Before signing the order last Thursday, Trump delivered a statement at the White House. Here's a listen.
Taxpayer dollars should not subsidize anti-First Amendment institutions, and that's exactly what they are, anti-First Amendment. Universities that want taxpayer dollars should promote free speech, not silence free speech.
The executive order also looks to increase reporting about academic outcomes and salary levels for college graduates as a way to help manage the problem of student debt. Laura Schwartz is lecturer in the Department of Government at American University, where she also directs the Project on Civil Discourse. She's author of the book, How to College, What to Know Before You Go and When You Get There, which comes out next month. Laura, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
What jumped out to you about what this executive order said or didn't say?
Sure. Well, what jumps out is, you know, there isn't much there. There's very little. It says there's maybe one operative sentence that says these departments are supposed to take measures to ensure that free inquiry is promoted. And what isn't there is what really jumps out. There's not any guidance that could give a university any sense of when it's violated this order. In that, I think there could be a real chilling effect on universities engaging in research, engaging in how they're running on-campus programs with outside speakers. So what I see is something vague and overbroad, and that would be the major problem.
So it sounds like you're saying that the lack of specifics, a lack of clarity, could actually be more restrictive than if it was spelled out more clearly.
Absolutely. The thing is when you think about being open to free speech, and universities are, it's really striking about the statement you just played, universities are anti-First Amendment institutions. You'd be hard-pressed to find a context that's more about and more embracing of conversation about tough ideas than a university. There's not a workplace that you'll find generally where you'll see more rigorous debate. So that really stands out as a way of talking about universities that doesn't ring true with those of us who are in them. Legally, speaking, restrictions on federal funds, they need to be clear. The people who are bound by any law need to be able to act on it and understand what a violation would look like. In this case, when you think about the examples that at the CPAC conference that Trump gave in justifying a future executive order, there was an incident where a non-student assaulted another non-student at Berkeley, and the issue was treated as the criminal assault that it was, and authorities were called, and the assault was investigated. In a time when a school delayed a speaker coming so they could set up proper security for their presence, so hard to understand what problem he's really identifying here.
So could this apply to private universities and colleges that get some federal money, or is this really geared towards public universities?
Well, here's the thing. The order says that private universities, so for your listeners, the First Amendment of our Constitution is a limitation on the government's power to prevent speech, right? So it says that, the government doesn't punish speech based on viewpoint. And so at public universities, the administrations are, and, faculty, everyone, are bound to allow free inquiry, allow free expression with limits for, safety and things like harassment. And private universities are free, though, because they're not the government, to set restrictions And that they might be engaging in bad behavior if they're limiting what people can say or think or do, but they're not violating the First Amendment because they're not the government. Most private universities, including the one where I work, American University, take free speech seriously enough to have adopted rules that say we act as if we were the government. We act, you know, we act completely coextensive with the First Amendment. What the executive order says is that private schools are supposed to be abiding by the guidelines and rules that they set up for themselves, whatever that means.
We're talking with Laura Schwartz right now. She's lecturer in the Department of Government at American University, where she also directs the Project on Civil Discourse. She's the author of the book, How to College, What to Know Before You Go and When You Get There, which comes out next month. And we're talking about the newly announced executive order dealing with free speech on campuses and tying federal research dollars to compliance with that. And Laura, this is an issue that has come up fairly frequently recently, often from conservative politicians and sources. Do you have a sense of when this really became kind of one of the fundamental issues on the conservative side of the political spectrum?
Well, there has been an increasing partisan divide in our opinions regarding higher education, regarding whether colleges, universities, professors are, you know, in general making the world a better place or they aren't. And that partisan divide has been there for some decades. If you look at research, the partisan divide on sort of approval of what colleges do sharply increased around 2015, 2016. So in the Trump era, the partisan divide about higher education is wider. There's been a gripe, I guess, about universities that they must be liberal or they must be biased for some decades now. I think a fever pitch like you saw with that CPAC announcement is more recent. Looking back broadly through history, our kind of current First Amendment law, our current academic freedom principles that we have about, you know, professors, researchers, universities, built up in the, you know, early and mid 20th century due to attacks on liberal professors who were professing, who, you know, might be talking about more radical or even Marxist economic ideas. And the free speech movement on campus really was born at University of California at Berkeley, where students asserting their free speech rights. So free speech on campus has a fairly liberal and progressive pedigree. The lens through which incidents with conservative speakers, particularly controversial speakers facing protests, is shown to America as this is what speech is like on campus, I'd say is a fairly new lens.
And is there actual data that can be pointed to that shows a breakdown of, you know, if it's obviously there are speakers that come to campuses that are not talking about political issues, that are not representing a part of the political spectrum, that are talking about something totally different. But of those that could be assigned a label of, say, conservative or liberal, do we have any sense of how the numbers come out?
Well, I don't know the numbers of who's coming to speak on campus. It wouldn't be a great metric, though, for how open people are to free speech. And here's why. Freedom of speech means getting to choose which speaker you want, who you want to bring to a campus. So if the students on a campus are overwhelmingly liberal because that community from which they're drawn, let's say, is overwhelmingly liberal, and this generation, so there are non-traditional college students, but just let's say the 18 to 22-year-old who's kind of the residential campus likely student, are also somewhat more on the liberal side. If they're choosing who to bring and they're saying, you know, I'm interested in hearing this liberal sociologist or this person, this economist or politician, and they're organizing that. If the universities put their thumb on the scale and said, well, you know, that's all well and good, but we want you to bring somebody else because that's not, you know, that's not conservative enough, and we want a flat percentage or a quota or something. You know, arguably they would be interfering with the students. So I don't think that's a good metric of whether people are open to free speech and debate. Now, we do have good data, though, on what college students think about free speech. College students are as open or more so to First Amendment protections as the public at large. And overwhelmingly, I think it's about 90%, say that freedom of speech and the First Amendment is very, very important to our society. They also tend to value inclusion, and some larger number of liberal students than conservative students say that inclusion and inclusivity might even be more important than free speech. But students overwhelmingly, college students across party and ideology lines, don't support, for example, small minorities of either party students or any party support, for instance, disrupting or excluding speakers.
We're talking with Laura Schwartz right now. She's director of the Project on Civil Discourse at American University, and we're looking at the president's executive order aimed at ensuring free speech rights in higher education. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you think this is a problem on college campuses? Is threatening to withhold federal funding the right way to ensure multiple viewpoints are heard? If you're a college student or an educator, how do you think the exchange of ideas is working at your school? And if you're the parent of kids who might be going to college soon, is this something on your mind? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation in just a bit. Stay with us here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. We're continuing our talk with Laura Schwartz, director of the Project on Civil Discourse at American University. And we're talking about the president's executive order meant to ensure a free exchange of ideas at public universities. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like there's an imbalance of free speech in higher education? Do you think the government should be withholding funding or research money to make sure certain viewpoints get heard? And if you're a student, how do you assess the situation at your school? Do you think this executive order is needed, or are concerns about free speech on campus overblown? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And Laura, James on Facebook said that he's looking forward to hearing about pro-abortion rights causes and LGBT speakers on conservative campuses if the goal really is free speech. And Dave writes on Facebook that the problem with free speech is everyone defines it how they want to define it. So that to me gets to kind of the heart of this is, what is free speech, and who decides?
Sure. So, yes, on the pro-abortion, pro-LGBT on conservative campuses, you know, a story did come out today looking at how Liberty University has at times apparently tried to censor or put their thumb on the scale with student journalists expressing various viewpoints, shut down college Democrats. So, absolutely, there are I think that is a fair point. What is free speech and who decides? So there's the legalistic answer, right? The government can't be punishing speech based on viewpoint. It can make time, place, or manner restrictions. So we can't be, if, you know, campus free speech doesn't mean you can use a megaphone in your residence hall at midnight, please, to talk about your favorite candidate or anything else. You know, place and manner, you can't be harassing people and threatening them. And those aren't protected speech. One thing that comes out of this concern about free speech on campus, that you hear these two questions free speech is literally, you know, not preventing people from speaking through government intervention and punishment. And then this other much different question of whether people feel comfortable expressing a particular viewpoint on campus. So they might say, well, you know, 80% of my fellow students at University of Wisconsin are more liberal than me. So if I talk about how I oppose abortion, you know, they really won't like it or they'll make fun of me. And so I don't feel free. And that's a serious thing for a student at a university to be grappling with. It's not a free speech question, though. And I find that in these conversations, the two questions, is one viewpoint popular, welcomed, particularly respected amongst your peers on your campus? And is the government interfering with your speech and your expression? They're different, but to a student off, you know, at college for the first time, trying to use her voice, make herself heard, have a social network, make an impact in the community, maybe that sense of being odd man out, though, is significant anyway, without being a free speech issue.
I want to bring some of our listeners on. First, Tom in Port Wing is up. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Yeah, I think there's a misunderstanding of what is desired through this, you know, order. And one of them is simply to get both sides of an issue. If you have a socialist on, then you have a person who speaks of the opposite capitalist side. If you have, that's how you get young people to understand both sides of the issue rather than just saying, well, the students only want this kind of a speaker. But the students don't always know what is best for them, and sometimes they need to actually be sat down and hear the other side of an issue rather than just close your mind off and say, I don't believe in this.
Thanks, Tom. I want to make sure we have time to bring on a couple other listeners. So let's go directly to Samuel in Milwaukee now. Samuel, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What would you like to add?
So I'm on the executive board of the College Republicans at UW-Milwaukee, and I would say that I think our university does far better than others that have received negative media attention over, you know, canceling conservative speaker events and such. I think that I've noticed that, and I'm a veteran and a non-traditional student, so I'm a little bit older than everybody else, but I've noticed that often a single employee who's unable to separate their political bias from their job at the university can often kind of paint perception for young conservatives or maybe in the opposite case, young liberal students as to how the university feels overall in supporting their First Amendment rights and free speech. And so I think this legislation or this executive order kind of reminded me of the changes in the in Bill Clinton's administration to the discrimination policies where companies became liable for discrimination by their employees. And so I see this as a good way to get skin in the game for universities to perhaps look at removing staff members who can't separate their political bias.
Thanks for that call, Samuel. And let's move to Susan in Mountain, Wisconsin. Hi, Susan.
Yes, I just wanted to point out that people are always forgetting that free speech also entails the protest against these conservative speakers at the universities. I think that conservatives just never like it when they're in the minority, because what the students are doing when they protest it and cause it to not happen, that is free speech.
And thank you for that call, Susan. I think Matt in Johnson Creek actually has something to address that. Matt, what did you have for us?
Yes, exactly. I think the so-called heckler's veto or mob censorship is really just a different clause in the First Amendment, which is the right to assemble. And I don't know how you can turn one on the other and actually enforce it with any sort of consistency. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. So a lot of perspectives there. Lara, what were you hearing from our callers?
Well, it's interesting. I think the question of free speech by protesters of speeches, that's a really important point. And University of Wisconsin-Madison, I know, created protest guidelines that attempt to suss out what constitutes protected protest of a visiting speaker versus a disruptive protest. So if you cross a line from asserting your First Amendment right to say, hey, this speaker's terrible, to making it impossible for other people to hear that speaker. So I think the University of Wisconsin has been trying to grapple with that. On the showing students both sides, I would remind the caller, you know, that's why one reason it's great that we have classes, and I love getting my students' feedback about what they want to learn, but I write my syllabi, and they don't. And in the academic, hopefully they read them. In the academic world, it's really, really important for us to present a balanced view of whatever the topic is we're teaching, so people can really become educated about it, not what I think or who I voted for, but a good, solid set of credible sources that enable a student to navigate an issue. And hopefully.
And we'll have to leave it there, Laura. Thanks so much for joining us. Laura Schwartz is the director of the Project on Civil Discourse at American University. She was with us to talk about President Trump's executive order on campus free speech and its implications.